Today on The Grave Talks, Reflection of Spirits, a conversation with Sean Daniel. Growing up as a child in a military family in Guam, Sean Daniel's playground was a jungle. Literally a jungle, filled with far more than just exotic plants and animals. Downed airplane wreckage, strained caves, and even the spirits of soldiers who passed away at war. This began a journey for Sean into the paranormal that he still travels to this day.
70s, Guam at the time was untouched. The jungles were untouched, and there was a lot of unexplosed ordnance and things like that. And us kids, there's nothing to do on Guam, you know, as 10, 11-year-olds. So we would chop through the boonies. And we came across this, it's an old FOU Corsair airplane. It's all been stripped, the guns have been cut out of it, everything. And we walked around it, and we were walking back, there's three of us. We're walking back out, and my buddy turns around and says, "Sean, look." And it's a full-body Japanese soldier in the old flight suit right behind the airplane. And we froze, and then we started running. We looked back again. He looked at us and faded away. And that's not the first time on Guam we had seen things like that. We've seen a white lady, like in a white sheet, like a white ghostly thing. They call her the White Lady. We'd seen that on the other side of the jungle. So, yeah, Guam is, at the time, they told us there's things out there, you know, watch for ordnance. Well, we got more than ordnance. We got some stuff that we weren't, you know, planning on getting. So that's kind of how that started.
And then
as I got older.
Yeah. And I want to hear about as you got older, but as you had that experience, as you were, you saw this apparition, what's going through your mind at the time? Did you believe in ghosts at that moment, or what was, you know, what's how you're processing this?
Well, that's my first time, except for watching it fade away. Well, we know that this guy, you know, the war's over. The war's been over. So we knew at that time that's when it hit me. That's the first time I'd had an experience that I was like, you know, I've never really thought about ghosts, you know, I'm only 10 or 11.
Sure.
That was the time. That's what we saw, and it went away. And then we saw, you know, a few months later, we see this white this shadow lady thing. And then we knew, and then my mind's spinning. And that's how it all started.
When you had the experience and you see this thing and there's no other explanation for you other than ghost. Do you go and tell your parents? Do you go and share this information with anyone?
We did. And I remember talking to my mom that, you know, and you know how parents can be. Well, I'm sure it was something, you know, they at the time, I think my mom, you know, mom and dad were skeptical. And of course I brought it up, you know, and say, hey, we all kind of ran to the house, you know, kind of winded and, hey, this is what we saw. And they were like, oh, yeah, well, I'm sure, you know. Yeah, sure, son, I'm, you know. So,
yeah.
Not much feedback from them, but.
Just kind of that dismissive, oh, you know. And the thing is, as a parent, when you look at that now, it's like, I get it. It's like, you don't want to, you know, stoke the fear, you know, if there would be any. But at the same time, you don't want to dismiss your kid. But unfortunately, quite often, it ends up coming across as just dismissive when I think sometimes parents are trying to be calming. Did you ever have the conversation later in life with your parents about that, of just how real it was?
Actually, I have, because, you know, my mom passed away a few years ago. And at the time I started, you know, just now 11 years I've been ghost hunting. And I showed her some of the stuff on my phone, stuff that I've captured, scratches, things like that. And she's like, son, that is unbelievable. But she believed me then. And then we had talked about Guam and everything. She goes, I had no idea. You know, she goes, I think you're a little crazy for doing this. I said, Mom, it's my passion. It's what I do. You know, and she done passed away and everything. But that's what, you know, and that's what led me up to now. And my wife's a crime scene investigator. And she goes out on some grisly stuff. I come off a week long of ghost hunting. And it's not surprising for a book to fly off the shelf. Mel meter going off. K2 going off. Dogs running down the stairs. So it's pretty much my life now.
Sure. When you were having those experiences growing up and you had those kind of, you know, back-to-back experiences of seeing those things out in the jungles in Guam, What was the atmosphere like? What were the, you know, what was life like with the other kids? Was it very much kind of an accepted thing? I know you said, you know, there's rumors. When you're that age, there's going to be rumors no matter where you are on the planet, I think, as far as children saying, you know, down there, there's this ghost story, there's legends, there's lore. But obviously you saw and experienced something firsthand. But what was the culture like there? Was it very much something different than the U.S. where it's just accepted, it's a part of life, it's as real as the clouds in the sky are? Or was it more of a hush-hush thing as it has been in our country for quite some time?
You know, like time, if you're talking about like our experience,
yeah,
walking out to the airplane, very hot, nothing that we were expecting. And when we saw what we saw, and our Jap, you know, our teacher, you know, we went back to our teacher. He was, I remember his name, Mr. Yamashigi. He was telling us about the haunted jungles. This is after the fact.
Yeah.
And this is what made it more real. He was telling us that he's seen things also, talking about his Japanese folklore, mm-hmm, and things like that. And we told him we saw a Japanese soldier. We saw it because we could tell by looking at him. We can tell by his flight suit. We described how different their flight suits are.
Yeah.
He says, absolutely. And then, about a year before we left Guam, we were going back out there. We started looking, you know, we were like, of course we never seen, you know, that again, but yeah, the culture on Guam at that time was, it seemed to me, just started getting around the local kids, around the Navy kids, mm-hmm, and all that started kind of firing up when I left the island.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as I watched things, the jungles and things like that. Guam was starting to seem, as easily as the kids go, it was starting to get kind of active.
So Mr. Yamashigi was the one who really kind of helped you validate it as an adult to have that, yes, that grown up voice going, I believe the kids. I know it's out there, whether mom and dad believe or not. It's out there. Is it? I mean, obviously, someone in a flight suit, our assumption is this is a ghost of war. This is someone who had perished out there. Was that kind of the main thought of who's out there in the jungle as far as haunting it at the time? As it being, you know, soldiers who had perished, or was there other things known to be out in the jungles?
You know, it's wild because we're looking at an old Navy airplane, and why would a Japanese soldier, he was staring at the tail section,
mm-hmm,
and did he shoot this plane down? Did he die in the jungle? Did he, you know, there's so many unanswered questions. You know, I don't know why wasn't an American pilot there that, you know, maybe, you know, who knows, but it was clear, you know, you could see his face. He was Japanese. Mm-hmm. And I even Googled old Japanese aviator uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Why was he there? Why was he behind staring at the airplane?
Yeah.
Slowly looked over at us and we're running and he fades away.
Sure.
And I don't know, but I vividly remember it. And my buddies, you know, everybody saw what we saw. And I don't know. It's just really bizarre. But Guam, you know, the war, there was Japanese, you know, Americans, there were ships out there, planes shot down.
I mean, just lots of tragedy, lots of death, lots of lives ended very suddenly. So it makes sense that would be out there. I mean, talking about one of the ultimate finds in the woods as a child growing up, I got excited if I found a tree stump that was shaped weirdly. But you had an airplane and a ghost, that, which is extremely interesting to hear about. As you got older, And as you got closer to the world of interest in paranormal investigation, as that became more of a thing, did you have other experiences between then, between the experience in Guam and actually getting into investigating?
No. I started watching the shows, some of the earlier TAP shows, things like that, and then more and more paranormal shows started coming out. And then I said, you know what? Got me a K2 meter, got me some cameras. Then I started building my more cameras, more stuff, and it started going out on my own. And that's what I've done ever since. There's not much of a, there is a little bit of a gap from Guam, you know, coming back to the, as a teenager, there was a gap to us doing nothing until the shows really started coming on.
Sure.
And that's what, you know, everybody started ghost hunting. Everybody was, it's a fever. It's really a fever now, but, and that's what I started. And then I started picking up things. I started getting voices. I mean, real voices, not even editable, crystal clear.
Was it?
And then things, just started happening.
Was it right away that you started getting things?
As a matter of fact, there's a hospital here in Pensacola, the old Sacred Heart Hospital. It's 110 years old. They have a pizza place in there. So every time it's a joke between me and my wife, we go there, we order pie. I go, I need to run to the hallway for a minute. And it's creepy. You can still see the gurney marks in there. Took my voice recorder out there, asked four questions, got four answers right off the bat. Came back, put them in my computer, and uploaded them. It didn't have to edit them. Crystal clear. But the guy, the owner of the hospital, he doesn't want any teams there. I've already talked to him. But as I started doing more of this and more of this, started snapping photos, started going to haunted hospitals, started doing other things, more and more evidence started coming in. And now it's just, next week I'm going to be heading out again. But now I've got eight cameras. Now I've got voice recorders. Now I've got, it's just grown.
Sure. When you set out and you're looking for areas that are going to have paranormal activity, is it places like hospitals and things like that that tend to be more active than others, or could it really be anywhere? Are there hospitals that are not haunted, I guess? In terms of volume of activity that would be in one given place at one given time?
I would say any hospital, any most of your haunted hospitals had hydroshock therapy and bath therapy and lobotomies and pain and St. Albans. I went with the Ghost Hunt Weekend. They do their, they have all the crew, from the Ghost Tennessee Ray Chasers. They show up, and I showed up there. They had a cool little thing going. We did a walkthrough, and you can feel it, you can feel the coldness of the hospital. You can feel you can almost feel the sorrow. It's just sad. Mm-hmm. And I took a picture, just doing on the walkthrough. I took a picture, and it's probably the best picture I've ever taken. It was full spectrum, it was daylight, a little bit daylight filtering through. It was a family. There's a woman, looks like peeking through the doorway, with her child wrapped around the waist, looking back. You can see his eyebrows and another face coming, peering from the other side of the door. And this picture went nuts. I sent it to everybody. Who are these people? Who is this family back here? And that's probably the best picture I've ever taken. But I got creepy EVPs. And I'm not a big orb fan. There's a whole controversy with orbs, but an intelligent orb that flies into frame and kind of floats for a second and kind of zips around.
Yeah.
Saw a lot of that. One zip past my recorder, and I got creepy EVPs. Shadows, you can just feel the cold, like behind you. You can feel it's 20 degrees cooler. Something just went by me, and you can feel it. But yes, haunted hospitals, prisons, I think have the deepest sorrow and the deepest, people were neglected, people were abused. And they, I think, are stuck in that time loop and either want to be heard or is going to let you know they're there.
How often do you think it is when we're talking about a haunted hospital that the activity is some sort of residual activity because of the sorrow, because of the pain, because of the emotional trauma that someone is going through? The image that you saw of a woman and a child wrapped around their leg, that almost to me feels like it would be, a mother and a child witnessing or just finding out the news of a loved one that has passed, and just tremendous sorrow and them being connected. So how is that? Do you believe in that specific incident, like a conscious spirit that is there, that is still hanging out? Because they probably were not the ones that died at that moment in that hospital. Or is that more of the imprint of that emotional trauma that they experienced at that second, and it's somehow there? It's an element in the world that somehow replays itself at the right time.
I think, looking at that picture and the feedback that I got from it, they think that it's possibly Indian. They think that that is a feather coming off the head, and the child appears, and from what people have emailed me in social media, say that is an Indian blanket wrapped around that child. Now, I did read up on St. Albans. They said as they were laying the groundwork, there was a lot of bloody battles with the Indians.
Okay.
I can't verify that. I did read that on a couple places. I don't know. I'm still researching that.
Sure.
But they're leaning more towards this as an Indian family that was either displaced or somehow tied into that hospital. But you can see right through them. You can see the shadow. You can see the light behind them. So, but they do say that child looks Indian, as an Indian little blanket wrapped around him.
So it might not even be.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, it might not even be anything that is necessarily even connected to the hospital itself or the events that happened in the structure, but more so the land prior to the structure being built.
Yes, that's that. Yep, I agree.
When we're talking about haunted hospitals, places that, for example, we, for the most part, don't spend a ton of time in. If you're in the hospital, I mean, sometimes, yes, a small percentage of us stay in there for quite some time in recovery. But quite often, hospital visits are not super extended. Most of life is going to be spent somewhere else. And if you were to pass in a hospital, why would you still continue to haunt that area? It's almost the same argument of cemeteries being uberly haunted or not at all. Again, areas that most of us, well, you know, other than us who are interested in this stuff, don't tend to spend a lot of time at. This is just an opinion question. Why do you think it is that areas like that would not necessarily have spent a lot of time in life are then frequented in death by an entity, and that can, you know, run into the world of conscious entity versus residual entity?
The best thing I can say is maybe they don't know to move on, or maybe the ones that were that experienced pain there, they experienced the torture there, or stuck there, mm-hmm. as to where a person was had died in an emergency room. Maybe they're still. They don't know where to go. That could be into a whole, maybe a religious thing. I don't know. Maybe they're stuck there. But I've talked to people when I go to certain hospitals or even a regular hospital, or I go to places and I say, hey, in this part of this place right here is where people die. The sixth floor, this is where all the terminal. Have you seen? And I just ask them this when I'm walking through or I'm checking, you know, I'm seeing a relative or a friend in the hospital. Yeah. I go ask them. I said, hey, have you seen things? She said, all the time. And I'm not, she goes, and the nurse said, I'm not I'm not into the paranormal things,
yeah.
but these people die on this floor. This is the critical floor. This is where people are dying of cancer. This is their final stages in life, the sixth floor of our local hospital here. And I just asked, and she said, absolutely. And some people, some people maybe weren't ready to die, and they're hanging on. They're, you know, you hear of people dying, suddenly from a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And they're not ready to leave this earth. And so there may be, there's that, and maybe the part where the people are, you know, were stuck in ice baths and stuck in, died that way, died by lobotomies, died by, you know, torture. Mm-hmm. Their souls could be recorded there as to where the people that died from natural causes in another hospital may want to leave that place. Or may take them a while to leave that place, or letting somebody know they're there, knocking papers off a cart, or something missing, you know, one of the doctor's instruments, mm-hmm. and it comes up missing. I said, it's that stethoscope right there. It's gone now. So I think there's a line between that, between extreme things and maybe natural causes.
It's a very interesting kind of rabbit hole to dive down, and I always like hearing others' opinions on it and thoughts based on what they've experienced. When we talk about hospitals, it's one thing when we're talking about an abandoned hospital or something that's been closed down and the structure is still there and there's still things going on. But what about the idea of the active hospital, like you were just talking about? You know, sixth floor, it's where things happen. You talk to a nurse or someone and they're not even into the paranormal, but they will tell you, yes, things happen. I cannot explain. The idea of the living being able to haunt their environments while they are still alive, but maybe not necessarily conscious. Maybe they're in a coma. Maybe they're just, you know, highly sedated and kind of passing in and out. That's been an interesting theme that I've been coming across in the last, I don't know, I'd probably say 2 years of individuals who are living, not even all the time necessarily in a hospital setting or anything like that, but their image, their consciousness, if you will, haunting the living around them. But they're not, when they wake up, they're not waking up saying, I was down the hall haunting Harry in room 7B. Although sometimes I have had stories of that nature, but for the most part, there's no like memory of it. What's your thoughts on that? Of just the energy of someone who is out, and their energy playing havoc in a hospital. You would think it could be a perfect setting for such a thing to be going on with so many people condensed in such a small space that are under heavy sedatives, that are in pain, that are coming in and out. You have a much larger opportunity there for that sort of phenomena to be happening than, you know, say necessarily a prison where people are awake, and they're going about their daily business. Well, it's open.
I think it's possible. And like you said, if the setting is right and somebody's in a coma, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of energy right there. And I think, you know, you're correct. If the setting is right, is it rare? I think it's rare. I think it would probably be kind of rare maybe to have, somebody in a coma to make, you know, or somebody like you said, coming in and out. But you are dealing with a lot of energy.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a tremendous amount of energy, especially if you're in a coma. That's a lot of stored energy.
Sure.
So, I think anything is possible. I think it's absolutely possible.
That's what I wonder about is how often are we dealing with truly the dead versus living energy that's out there. But we have for so long just simply assumed that if a book is flying off a shelf or something unexplained is happening that otherwise doesn't have a logical explanation, we would go to ghost, in its most generic of terms, of a spirit of someone dead or angel, demon, whatever it may be. I really am beginning to wonder how much paranormal activity that we have out there, or supernatural activity, is not the dead, but necessarily it's the living that are influencing things without awareness of doing so.
Absolutely. I think it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an interesting road to go down. When you go on a paranormal investigation and you're out there, when you began going on paranormal investigations, I should phrase it that way. When you started doing this seriously as an adult, what initially was your goal?
What I want to do, for example, the Haunted Dufuniac Hotel. I know. I'll plot the location.
Yeah.
Okay. I Google this hotel, and I read that it's haunted. Now I can't find anything on YouTube. I can't find anything except one team had gone there before. So I show up at this hotel. It's an hour from here, Dufuniac Springs Hotel. It's 100 years old. Nobody has checked in but me. Nobody. And this is great. I got two big bags of gear and a cook from New Orleans. And I had to eat out of a box because this whole COVID thing. So we had to do the restrictions.
Sure.
But later that night, he goes, "All right, man, I'm leaving." And I go, "Where are you going?" He goes, "I'm going home." "You got it." "This whole hotel?" And he goes, "Yeah. Are you scared?" I go, well, no. So I started setting up cameras and I started doing this. Something crashes in the kitchen. It's like somebody took a pizza pan so loud that I jumped. And not much else happened except when I'm reviewing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I sleep with two trail cams on me everywhere I go when I'm staying somewhere, but two trail cams in the room. And I'm checking on the next day, and I always get nervous when I'm looking to see when you're sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And several things happen. This orb comes into frame real slow and sets right over my head, drops straight down on my head enough to wake me up. And it shows me waking up and I'm looking around. And downstairs, I took a full spectrum picture. I took two. I'm looking them back on my monitor when I'm looking. And it's a full blown, looks like the Milky Way. It looks like stars, a giant bright ball over the table. The second picture I took, all the stars go to the left. The ball drops a little bit. And I've showed this to hundreds of people. They said, "It's absolute amazing. I think you have a portal right there." So I don't know what I'm going to get. 85%, I don't know what I'm get till I get back and I review everything.
Sure.
And it's mind-blowing, the stuff I got from that hotel. But that's what I do. I plot out where I'm going to go, and I don't know what to expect. I don't know what I'm going to get. And that's what I like about paranormal investigating. You never know what you're going to run into.
When you show those videos, for example, to someone, and like you said you've shown it to hundreds of people, and a majority sounds like said, you got something here. There's clearly something here. And I understand that, and I if I saw it, I would be probably very much in agreement with that. Yeah, that's definitely something there. What are some of the ways that you've heard things like that attempted to be debunked?
Sure. I get a lot of feedback, and I try to debunk everything. I'm not, sure. You know, some of these younger investigators, look at all these orbs.
Everything's a ghost.
You're on a dusty road, dude. You just use your flash.
Yeah.
So, I try to debunk everything with logic. So the first thing I do, we have a big, our neighborhood we live in, we have a big neighborhood Facebook page. So all the people that don't ghost hunt, some people are into the paranormal that don't ghost hunt, I'll send it out to them. And what I see, matter of fact, I didn't have one person from this thing that came in and woke me up. I had to brighten the whole picture up because you can't see it until you brighten the picture up. Clearly comes into frame and just drops straight down like it wants to. And then it shows me rolling over, waking up. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get almost anybody, I think, that said, that's probably pretty amazing. But I'm very careful what I post on my site or my YouTube channel, because they will eat you alive. And, you know, and that's the rough crowd at times, too. Plus, you have people faking evidence. You got modern technology. You got people doctoring stuff. So I do a lot of video, probably do more video than I do anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm very careful what I post. And so far, some of the stuff that I got is pretty amazing. And it's hard to be doctored. You know,
sure.
I'm not a big orb fan. It does, you know, the whole controversy with that. But something that moves in and just floats and kind of stops mid-flight and says, I'm going straight down in this guy's dome right here. Bam. And then I woke up, rolled over, and it's pitch black dark in the room. The trail cam caught it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what was happening while I was sleeping?
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be troubling, just saying, you know, and what, you know, you wonder, what's its purpose? What is it doing? Is it just trying to get your attention? What, you know, when you look back on that experience there, what sort of conclusions did you personally come to as to what the heck was going on there or why?
I don't know. It's a 100-year-old hotel. And yeah. They said that in that room that I was in, there was rumored two little girls passed away in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a K2 hit. It's perfect. I said, is this the little girls? It lit up. Do you have a guardian? It lit up. And I don't know without doing more digging into this hotel, but, that portal with all them lights, a team had came in before and caught an SLS shadow figure in the same room where I was at. They said it looked like it was 8 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
They said on the SLS, it's the biggest thing, you know, it looks like stick figures. That's the biggest thing they've ever seen. And only one team had been in before, and they got some things. And of course, when I'm sleeping is when things start to, you know, that's why where you hunt, where you sleep, sometimes that can get kind of crazy.
Sure. Do you think that there's a reason why sometimes you'll get more dramatic things caught on a camera while you're sleeping versus while you're awake? Is there a logic behind that? Is there a... we don't want to come out while the living are awake. We'd rather, you know, make our appearance while they can't see us or sense us.
It could be. Maybe they're shy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, it's my room's dark anyway, and it's really dark when the lights are out. But again, on the other side of the coin, this antique store that I went to, a general filming thing, mm-hmm. like to film things, you know, 20% of the time and then hunt 80% of the time.
Yeah.
It turned into this filming event at this antique store turned into a full-blown investigation. The power went out, and the owner said, this power hasn't gone out in 20 years. I'm standing next to a 16th century armoire that's got faces on it carved like that of a haunted mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm playing back my video, I got EVPs. I got several EVPs. This orb flies straight past my camera out of one of the things. So this is broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
EVPs in this, and somebody said on my channel, dude, look behind you. That picture is moving. And it was. So I told the owner, I said, he's going to let me come back and do a full set up some cameras and leave them all week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think there's any time some of my best stuff has been during the day.
Yeah.
Unintentionally, you know, some of the best evidence.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Sean Daniel. In part two, we're going to ask him, why do objects sometimes have spirits attached to them? Is Sean afraid of bringing home a haunted object? Does Sean believe that mirrors could hold more spirits or ghostly activity than other objects? And does a mirror have to be old to be haunted? And what does Sean hope to have happen with a haunted mirror he plans to bring home? Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening.